Ever wonder if there's more to the movies you love? Do you like to ponder how they got from A to Z? Who chose the plot twists? Why use those characters? Is there a deeper meaning? We're here to explore those questions and maybe learn a bit along the way. VGB Studios proudly presents The Filmlosophers.
Hello and welcome to another exciting episode of The Filmlosophers, the show that gets into the movies you love and digs a little deeper. I am your host, Eddie Villanueva, and alongside me, as always, is Chad New Year's Riley.
That's right. Happy New Year.
It's right. We are in 2018, and this is the kickoff episode of The Filmlosophers. We've been doing shows for a little under 2 years.
Just under 2 years. We're going to celebrate our second birthday in a couple of months.
That's right. And we are so excited for the new year to come in that we actually have some exciting news to tell you. So, but before we get to that, we're going to let you know a little bit of information that you should be used to by now if you're a listener.
Every episode has this information at the top.
Exactly. We are presented by Mingle Media TV and recording live at VGB Studios every week. You can catch us on all different platforms. Google Play, iTunes are the main ones. And we debut new episodes every Wednesday.
Yeah, just remember it's Filmlosophers, not Philosophers.
We get that a lot.
Filmlosophers. It's film philosophers.
We get that one a lot as well.
You'll find us someday, I promise.
We swear it. And then as well, you can chat with us on our Facebook page at facebook.com/filmlosophers or our Twitter page at twitter.com/philosophy101. And you can find us at our website at filmlosophers.com.
That's right.
We have our own URL. We have yet to use it, and we decided we should start using it. So, filmlosophers.com.
Hey, it's 2018. Time to tell people that we have our own URL. It takes you to the same page that we've always told you about, but it sounds like us.
Exactly. It sounds more professional. I know we rushed through all this, but it's because we are so excited for the news that we have. So, if you...
I almost want to go grab a kazoo from the other room.
I don't... Do we have...
Well, kazoos? I mean, like, noisemakers.
Oh, gotcha.
This was New Year's. Worthy announcement that you're
about to give. And I might just do that in post. But we have some exciting news. Like we said, we're coming into a whole new year. We're coming into a whole new era of the Filmlosophers. And one of the things that we decided was necessary, and I use the term necessary because as everything began to change, we decided we needed to change as well. So we want to welcome a certain somebody, a special somebody, to the team. We have now become from a dynamic duo to a dynamic trio, if you will. And we want to welcome our brand new Filmlosopher Spencer Williams. Thank you, Spence. Woo! Come on.
Yeah, I'm on the show now as a host. So if you didn't like what I had to say before, I've got bad news for you. I'm going to be here a while.
His voice is going to be heard all the time. And now that's barely sinking in.
What an introduction. I mean, man, if this was a job interview, you would have nailed it.
Yeah.
Like, it's now settling in. We are going to hear Spencer's voice every episode. Oh, man. What did we get ourselves into?
Oh, this is going to be great. It's going to be a good year. We got a bright future ahead of us.
We do. Spencer has shown a lot of enthusiasm when he's on the show, and we love the dynamic that he's had. We've had several of you mention that to us, whether in person or through social posts or whatever, how you like the dynamic of Spencer in the conversation. So basically,
it's your fault.
It is.
No, it's 100% your fault.
We can totally put this on our listeners. It is 100%, without a doubt, their fault that Spencer is now a part of this team. But in all honesty, it's a great new dynamic. It's going to be a lot of fun. And if you've listened to the last couple of episodes, Spencer has been a great addition to those conversations. And so that's what you have to look forward to in 2018 and beyond.
That's right.
I'm looking forward
to it.
It's going to be fun.
So we've talked about, if you listened to the last episode, our review of 2017, one of the films that Spencer actually stated was his film of 2017 was...
Get Out.
And...
No, Get Out.
I'm tired of you. You know what? I'm telling you.
We have another announcement to make, Eddie. Spencer's in and you're out.
Wow, the revolving door, if you will. Oh my God.
No, Get Out. No, dude, for real.
Get Out.
They're pointing to the door, guys. Oh my gosh. No, so we talked about this on the last episode, and Spencer stated this was his film of 2017. I actually agreed with him, and then we
came to... Well, you agreed with him because you had like 18 films.
I had three.
So many films.
I had three films on my top films list.
Top film.
I added the S.
There was no S.
I'm going to start speaking in plurals all the time just so that I can justify any time I speak of
speak about it all the way out the door.
So films, and Spencer and I agreed on it, but we were kind of astonished that Chad had yet to see it, trying to put the blame on me because he had gotten it from me in October.
Because I knew I purchased the film on DVD for you, Blu-ray and DVD for you.
Uh-huh.
For the purposes of, well, number one, giving you a gift, because, you know, I knew you enjoyed the movie. But also so that you could finally, like, show me what all the buzz was about. Did you? No.
No. I didn't.
I had to beg. I bought the stupid thing and I had to beg. Please let me watch
it. And then it took till me mentioning it last week. It's like, oh, we should watch that movie.
And that's so true. We have.
And we did. And we're not just watching it just for the simple fact of just watching it, but because of the fact that there's so much buzz around this film. The Golden Globes has just happened this past weekend, and with the announcement of Daniel Kaluuya as one of the nominees for Best Actor in a Musical or Comedy, which...
Yeah, it's, that's that weird behind-the-scenes Hollywood politics thing, like the way that you... Sometimes people, you know, it's like when people get put into the supporting actor category instead of the best actor category,
yeah.
And it's because they didn't think that they could. It's all political. Choices
it's
like
all
that
ridiculousness.
Are just like, where do we think we have the best chance?
Yeah,
not because this is actually comedy, because it is not, and it certainly isn't a musical.
Oh no, this is the best musical of 2017.
Get out! Get out! I can see it now.
Wow.
So, because of the timeliness of this film in terms of Oscar season, award season altogether, and the conversation that it starts up every time people mention, hey, have you seen the movie Get Out? Hey, and with everything else that's going on around the world, not just with Hollywood, but it seems to be everywhere nowadays, of the idea of, you know, racial tensions and just the differences and the great divide that comes across the nation. It just seems like this film was... destined to be talked about on this film sooner or later.
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely been a topic of conversation. It's been a conversation starter ever since shortly before it came out. It was making some, you know, film festival circuit appearances before it got wide distribution. And so it's been a topic of conversation. It's back into like that lane of, hey, this is still something that needs to be talked about.
Oh yeah.
And I think one of the things that really surprised everybody about it, you know, from the outside looking in when it was first coming out, was the director of the film.
Oh yeah.
Jordan Peele, a comedian, like, you know, Key and Peele fame, like way fame, Mondo fame, right, as a comedian. And he does this as his, you know, directorial feature length directorial debut. And, you know, I think audiences were pleasantly surprised with how well done it is, not being a comedy, because it isn't.
No, by far. It's, and I think that was the thing that kind of shook a lot of people in wondering, okay, everybody had seen a lot of the skits that Jordan Peele had done prior to this film on, like Chad said, Key and Peele, as well as his...
which are phenomenal, by the way.
Some of the best skits out there in the last, decade? And then you had his other stuff that he'd done, his comedy, his stand-up, all those things. And then you have him step out after the, I guess, did they cancel Key and Peele, or did they just stop? They just retired from the show.
I don't
know the story behind it.
I'm not sure what the story is with that one.
I think they kind of just retired from it and went on to do their own things.
Well,
they're still friends. All indications are that they're still friends.
But ever since the end of that, finding out that his next project after doing all that was a serious horror-esque, I guess, type film, because that's what a lot of people were first recognizing it as. They were like, oh, he's going to make a horror film. He's going to make a horror film about, you know, the social commentary horror film of the year, you know, and which... many people had tried to do those things, and some of them land and some of them don't. And so I think this was kind of one of those things like, let's see what he does. Okay. Like,
well, that's one of the things that really works about the film is that when it first came out, obviously, it was kind of billed as a horror film. It was billed as a scary movie, at the very least, a thriller. And there is definitely a thriller component to the way the story works on screen. But then now, obviously, we're seeing some of these award entries, and it's in the comedy or musical category, right? And everybody's like, well, that's not it either. And I think that it's one of the things that's so pleasantly surprising about it, because it's not a very pleasant movie. Like, the subject matter isn't pleasant.
Oh, no.
But one of the things that's pleasantly surprising about, I guess, the zeitgeist of how it ties in to real-world concerns that are very timely and of the moment. But one of the things about the film is that it defies classification to a certain point. You can say, well, it's a little bit of this, it's a little bit of that, and it's probably a little bit of seven other things.
Yeah.
And that's what makes it really special. It's not just one thing. It's not just a psychological thriller of, you know, plot point, twist, and ending. It's got other layers to it.
Spence, why don't you give us that official synopsis goodness over there real quick?
Oh, okay. So, Chris and his girlfriend Rose go upstate to visit her parents for the weekend. At first, Chris reads the family's overly accommodating behavior as nervous attempts to deal with their daughter's interracial relationship. But as the weekend progresses, a series of increasingly disturbing discoveries lead him to the truth that he never could have imagined.
Dang, Skippy.
Yeah. I'm practicing.
Directed by first-time filmmaker Jordan Peele, the film stars Daniel Kaluuya, Allison Williams, Bradley Whitford, Catherine Keener, and Lil Rel Howery. He's the individual who plays the TSA agent.
Yeah.
So,
right on.
As Chad said, this film has really made its way through a lot of different circles all over the world in terms of what this film represents, what this film speaks towards, and this film had actually made its way even to our circles. There are many people that we know individually as well as collectively that have seen the film that have either found it to be profound, unique, actually inspiring. And then there are those who are like, yeah, that was dumb or that was ridiculous. That was like, oh, yeah, I spotted that plot point a mile down the way and whatnot. Not to name names, but Omar was one of them. So we're...
Well, haters gonna hate.
It's true. and so we finally decided to sit down together now that we have established this duo as a trio, and we had an opportunity to kind of decide where we're gonna see this film. We finally sat down, we had Chad sit down and sit with us, and we watched the film fully through and through, and here we are.
That's right. And not only did we watch the film, but because now we've waited so long to review it that it's out on DVD and Blu-ray, we got to see the original ending for the film that is on the disc as an alternate ending.
Is it the original or is it an alternate?
Well, I was reading an article where Jordan Peele said that the alternate ending was the original ending to the movie, but he changed it because, one, it was depressing.
Yeah, it was super depressing. I was like, man.
Yeah. Watch out, y'all.
And two, he thought, because of everything that's happened with, like, Black Lives Matter and other things, like in the recent news media, that he thought it would probably fit better if it ended as a more of a triumph for Chris, the main character himself.
Yeah. Huh. Well, that makes sense. I mean,
which it did. I mean, by the time you get to the end of the story, you need a little bit of hope.
Like, you need something.
You need something that's a little bit of an uplifting moment.
So I know we're going to kind of go back and we're going to, because... The first time you saw it, Spence, was back in February, as well as was I.
Right.
And Chad is the one who had freshly seen it. So I think the first question should kind of go towards Chad in terms of what were you expecting out of the viewing the film? What was the one thing that leading up to, seeing as you've already recognized a lot of the conversations that had already gone on around, and obviously everybody gave high praise in terms of its commentary, what were some of the things you were expecting coming into the film?
Well, one of the things that's unique about my opportunity to view the film, usually when we like to ask that question, like, what did you think going in? And mostly what we have to base our assumptions or our hopes or fears or whatever on are the trailers and TV spots.
Yeah.
And maybe a few, you know, early reviews from other, you know, other media that are cooler than us and get to see it even earlier than we do. But with this one, it's for me at least, it's unique because not only did I have what I was thinking when I was seeing the trailers, and I remember when Eddie invited somebody else to go see it instead of me.
Aye.
So I felt left out. But I also have had months and months and months of, you know, feedback from from both of you, from other people, just hearing how good it was. And
did Omar tell you too that he didn't like it?
I don't recall Omar talking to me about this particular film.
But, I remember Omar talking to me. I remember
so
every
I think
time.
When I was getting ready to see it much more recently, as in right before recording this episode, I my expectations were high. I think if you had asked me that question before, I would have had more of a middle road. Like, I expect it to be compelling because some early reviews say that it's better than you would expect it to be. Yeah. So I would probably, because I'm not, we all know this, I'm not a scary movie horror genre person. Like, it doesn't appeal to me. I go to those kinds of movies kicking and screaming, but which is why you didn't invite me. But yeah, so but now
that's a point
after
to my logic,
after hearing you know, feedback from everybody else, I actually went in with very high expectations. Yeah. I wanted to pay attention to the film in a different way than casually going to see it in the theater and seeing, you know, how I felt. I wanted to really kind of dissect it as it was going along, not to figure out plot twists and things ahead of time, because that irks me. Yeah. I don't try to figure out plot twists early, because then I'm automatically gonna like the movie less than I should, just because I overthought things. I didn't let the story guide me through the experience.
Yeah.
So I wasn't trying to figure out twists before they happened. But I definitely was looking for some of those deeper meaning elements to be there. And there were some, I would say that, some scenes and sequences that I was expecting, based on the feedback and all the positive reviews, I was expecting a little more than what is actually in there. But most of the time there was a lot of deeper meaning to, I guess, be seen or be obtained somehow.
Yeah,
in the experience,
and I think that's one of the things. I'm gonna be honest. I admire that in a lot of people, because the idea of looking past the obvious of what you see in films and assuming that you've, quote, figured it out,
right?
Because that's not what a movie is about. Just kind of like my little soapbox here. I don't like individuals who spend their energy while at a film trying to figure out the last couple of lines of the movie so that they can have that kind of proud moment after the film, you know, after the film's over, and be like, oh yeah, I figured that out, you know, way early in the movie. Or I was, because then that tells me,
think that figuring it out is the point.
Yeah, exactly.
That's one of those things like, okay, so you figured out a plot point or three, but you missed the point of the film. Like, you missed the heart of the story was overlooked because you were trying to prefigure out a scene that was going to happen later.
Exactly. And for me, all it tells me was that your mind was not focused on what was going on in that moment. And if there ever was a movie that kind of emphasized that for me, was after we saw, myself and Chad, after we saw the screening for Arrival.
Absolutely. I'm thinking this. I'm right on the same wavelength.
Because it's like, as soon as the movie was done, and I'm like, man, that was beautiful. That was great. Me and Chad were like literally looking at each other saying, that was an incredible film.
Oh, I totally had tears in my eyes.
He did.
Because of how they pulled off telling the deeper story. It wasn't any plot element within the movie. It was like, how in the world, Denis Villeneuve and your team, how in the world did you just accomplish that?
Oh, yeah, completely. And as we're reflecting on that, there are literal people behind us that are like, oh, yeah, I didn't get it. I figured out some of the parts that I was just like, I didn't really get it. I didn't want to, or I figured out how it was going to end a long time. I knew that this and this and that was happening. I knew she was, you know, this and that early on. And it was so obvious. And I'm like, if it's so obvious, then you're not really looking deeper into what the director wants you to see.
The obvious level of the story, and I think that's the same thing here with Get Out. The obvious level of the story is, it's sort of like the iceberg principle, right?
Yeah.
10% above the surface, 90% below. So if you're like, you know, patting yourself on the back that you got the 10% above the surface and you mapped it out faster than the movie let you do it, okay, good on you, but you missed 90% of the meaning of the story and the weight.
Well, there's even like some parts of the story where like they're foreshadowing on stuff, but you don't know that at the time. If you're once you're on your second view, you're like, oh my gosh, they were basically blatant like the whole movie on what certain things were going to happen.
Yeah. And it's funny that you say that because I was actually thinking it while we were watching the film. I'm like, oh snap. Okay. Yeah. Yeah. Oh snap. And early on I'm getting excited, but I'm also getting anxious for the character as, you know, things are you know, transpiring and you're seeing certain things and you're like, oh my gosh, this was because they were going to set up that and they're going to do this. But at the same time as my brain is recognizing those things, I'm also able to see like deeper into, okay, I see what they're saying. I see what they're telling me. Now I'm looking at what they were thinking while they were telling me. And yeah, I just, going back to what I was saying, I can't stand people like that. I don't find enjoyment going to the movies with people like that, because then you come out and you're like, okay, I get it. You understood her role 20 minutes into a 2-hour movie. Congratulations. What'd you do with yourself for the next, you know, hour and 40 minutes, you know?
Did you pay attention to the bigger story?
Yeah.
No, not really.
And I think going back to what Chad was saying, I think this was one of those movies where a lot of people at first glance walked into it thinking it was going to be one of those films. And then as the film continued on and as people began to see the bigger picture and starting to see the similarities and the parallels, and it's like, I think he's trying to say something more than just a simple horror film or a simple, you know, jump scare type of feature. Spence, what about you? What was some of the things that was going through your mind while you first saw the film back in February?
Well, when I first saw it, like, all I knew is that it was like some horror film-esque, like, because people were kind of like, it's not really a horror film. I'm like, okay. But it had something to do with like being black in America and like a horror film-esque type thing. And I was like,
Real quick, I don't mean to point out simple little things, but was that what caught your attention more?
Oh, no. What caught my attention was it was done by Jordan Peele.
Okay.
Because, like, I knew him from, like, comedy stuff, so I was like, that sounds like an interesting setup.
Yeah.
So I was like, well, I trust him with comedy. Let's give it a try on, like, whatever this is.
Mm.
And
whatever this is. We're still trying to figure that out.
And yeah, like within like the first couple of minutes, I was super into this movie because there's this guy walking down the street and something creepy starts happening and he's like, nope, and tries to leave. And I was like, this is amazing. I've never seen this before. So I was super into this movie at that point.
This is amazing. Yeah, it's a black man walking down a dimly lit street in a suburban neighborhood. Mm-hmm. He's trying to navigate to a place that he's been told to go, and there's some creepy car that passes him going the opposite direction and then turns around and creeps up on him, and he recognizes that they're stalking him. They're wanting to abduct him, and he tries to escape. It doesn't work, and he gets abducted. That's the first opening sequence. It's not the main character. It's, you know, just some guy that you never really know his name. You don't know who he is, but it's an interesting setup.
Yeah.
For sure, because it's definitely one of those, oh, snap. I mean, I know that's a dated phrase, but still, I mean, the way that whole sequence transpires, you're like, oh, dang.
Now, I'm gonna be pretty transparent right about now in what I'm going to say, but there was, after I saw that scene, I got a little upset at Spencer, specifically Spencer. And What did I do? Now I'm going to tell you what you did.
Ooh,
I'm going to tell you what you did.
The show is getting good.
So many years ago, we were out one night and we were playing a board game over a friend's house.
Yep.
The game went on very late at night.
Yep.
And so it was about 2 o'clock in the morning, 2-3 in the morning.
At least.
And Spencer was there, and we were all playing this game, and Spencer says, hey, guys, I got to go. I'm going to head out. I'm going to go home. We're like, okay, cool. Spencer walks out the door. 10, 15 minutes in, we start realizing, wait, I don't think Spence brought a car. Wait, what? It wasn't until the following morning that we found out that Spencer Williams decided to walk home at 2:30, 3 o'clock in the morning, all the way from this person's house to his own house.
4 miles or so?
No.
3.5?
It had to be further than that.
I don't know the exact mileage.
Don't make me pull out Google Maps. I will do the whole thing. It was a long walk. How long did it take you to get home? A
couple of hours.
See? That's what I'm saying. And so after I saw that movie, or after I saw that scene, I was watching the movie, and after I saw that scene, I'm like, you see? This is what could have happened to Spencer. What was he thinking? It had been years already since that happened, and it reignited the flame of why I got upset at you. It's like, this guy, he can't be doing this. What is he thinking? So,
for those of you who don't know, Spencer is black.
Yeah,
which is why this particular sequence matches so much to the memory that Eddie's talking about. That was what, 5 years ago, 4 years
ago? Yeah, it was a while ago.
Probably 5 years ago. It was a long
talking about it.
It was a long time, but I mean, it scarred all of us deeply.
It did.
I was the one walking.
Yeah, but you didn't tell anybody. Everybody was so upset. They were like, Spencer, we could have driven you. It would have taken maybe 10 minutes out of our time. And no, I was going to walk for 4 hours at home. What time did you get home?
I'm sorry, is this a film podcast or a Let's Bash Spencer podcast?
This is a Spencer, Where's Your Common Sense podcast.
Sometimes a film just brings up all those unresolved things that you need closure on.
It's
still
true.
You know, that's one of the great things about this movie, isn't it?
Okay, we'll hug it out afterwards.
Yeah, whatever. So this was one of those films that obviously, just like in that moment, it sparked a lot of reactions from a lot of people. It sparked a lot of emotions. It sparked a lot of conversation. And I mean, when it comes to expectations, I think that's one of the golden things about this film, is that you really don't have many expectations coming in, other than knowing Jordan Peele is a comedic actor, comedian, and is making the transition to creating some type of horror-esque film. Unless there was like going to be a whole scary movie, like the Wayans Brothers Scary Movie type vibe, I wasn't sure what to expect coming into this film, to be honest with you.
Well, and I think that the his notoriety was definitely a selling point for it, because looking at it and you're like, nothing about this trailer says like a Wayans Brothers spoof comedy movie. Nothing about this trailer says, oh, the same thing we're used to seeing in a Key and Peele sketch, but as a feature-length project. Everything about the trailer was kind of moody and darker, and there were some sinister undertones to it. And so you're like, wait a minute, he made this? What is this?
Yeah. And I'm actually surprised, but I'm not, you know, that he didn't make an appearance in the film. Not that I know of. I don't think he makes an appearance in the film. I know his voice is in the film, but I don't think he's actually physically in the film. But this film really was a big surprise for a lot of us. And it was a surprise for me. Like, after seeing it, the first thing that I thought about was like, okay, how many people are going to actually, honestly, how many people are actually going to go into this film, see it, and get what I'm getting?
You know? That has been my question, and like, because I am super curious, like, how people like interpret it, like how Chad interprets it versus like you, Eddie, because like I know like you've had some issues in the past with like race stuff, and so I don't know like how you interpret some of that, Chad.
Is this because I'm white? it's honestly, there's a large degree of discomfort. Mm-hmm. A little history lesson. When I went to college, I took an anthropology course, and the very first thing that was covered in the anthropology course, was white privilege. And
wow.
And it was like the course overall was at, the professor had spent a lot of time in India. And so most of the class, we actually studied the caste system in India and some of the dynamics in that. And it wasn't really related, that part of the course wasn't related to white privilege at all. But I mean, as a freshman in college, to really be kind of run through the ringer. I mean, I remember the first class session, I walked out thinking, okay, I'm a middle class white American male, which makes me the world's worst bad guy somehow. Like, that was the feeling that I had, was like, I never knew that I was the bad guy in the story. You see like, you know, racial tensions, you see class differentiation that isn't fair, isn't based on, you know, anything other than presumption and prejudice, right? And you see those things, and you notice the tension. But then, I mean, I came from a very homogenous community. It's not as homogenous now. I mean, there's a lot more diversity, thankfully, in my hometown. But there was just a lot of the same in that area. And so to be confronted with that as a freshman in college was quite a wake-up call. I remember walking out of the classroom feeling really bad about having my genetics. Mm. And I wrestled with it for a while. And I made a point in college to befriend people of different backgrounds than me. Because, number one, I think that there's tremendous value in getting to know all kinds of people from all kinds of places, all walks of life. Like, it adds so much to your experience. And hopefully you can add to theirs as well. But then after college, I worked for a year in New York, which is where this film starts, New York City, and then they go to upstate New York. And then I worked for a nonprofit called Teach for America, and I was placed as a middle school English teacher in Oakland, California. And I got to confront a lot of things that were uncomfortable for me, completely unknown to me for that entire period. A lot of it was very racially charged. I was struck by the fact that my first year I had student after student after student. Our school was 92% African American, and then a mix of Latino, Hispanic, and quite a large a bit of Vietnamese specific Asian American, and then there was a large population of students from Yemen, families from Yemen that had immigrated to the Oakland area around that time. And so there was a lot of you know, just conversation. I had student after student after student say, either they called me Clark Kent because I was a tall white guy with dark hair, and that was the closest reference, or they didn't say it in a flattering way. They weren't saying I was Superman. They were just like, it was just sort of that's the pop culture reference we've got for you. Or I had several students that insisted that because I was there in that school with them, there was no way that I was only white. I had to be mixed somehow. I had to have some other background, because why would I be there if I was fully white? And it was a conversation that kept going and going and going for especially a lot of my second year there. And a lot of that has stuck with me. So watching this film, you know, and obviously that was many years ago. I've had a lot of life experiences, and I'm very happy to say that my peer group and people that I regularly am in touch with, like, I come from all kinds of different backgrounds, and I love that. I value that. And not everybody looks like me, not everybody talks like me or has my background, and that's fantastic. But watching this film definitely brought a lot of that back up, where there's like, wow, again, you know, back to the white privilege thing, and like, my experience and somebody else's experience, each of you guys included, like, they're not the same.
No.
And if anything, at a very base level, if you get anything out of this movie, it's not so much the finger pointing of, well, because you are, you know, white American male, middle or upper class, or even female or whatever, that makes you the demon. It's not that specific. Although all of the antagonists in this film are white, for sure.
Yeah.
But the big takeaway is for me was, wow, this just reminds me again how I take a lot of my experiences for granted. And it's easy for me to assume that certain things that everybody has a similar experience walking down a suburban street, even at night. The thing that my brain often does, because I have two younger sisters, considerably younger than me, and I've been very protective of them, you know, my whole life. So I have a very strong sonar, I guess you could say, for I would not want my sisters walking alone as young women alone down any kind of street at night.
Yeah.
And that may or may not be fair to the street or to, you know, women or whatever. But as a protective older brother, my sonar pings at that. But if I'm looking at other men like the two of you and I'm thinking, oh, suburban street, well, I'm comfortable walking down a street unless there's like some nasty dog that I think might break through a fence and come at me, you know, and I would think the experience would be the same for each of you. But like we said, that opening sequence does a great job of pointing out, because that character, as he's walking down the street, he's on the phone with a friend and he's talking about how uncomfortable he is and how out of place he feels.
Yeah.
And specifically the undertone is the vulnerability that he feels in that environment. And it really highlights, and there are numerous points throughout the film that highlight those, like, wow, even simple everyday things, your experience, my experience can be wildly different, and I need to respect that.
Yeah.
And hopefully, you know, be very aware of, you know, at least some of what your experience might be that's different from mine. Like, not just say, oh yeah, it's different, deal with it, you know, but have some compassion and actually try, like, what would it feel like to be that guy walking down that street and have the car turn around and follow you creepy, and then the door opens and somebody gets out in a costume to come at you? Like, what, you know, that's like a fear coming true. But that's a fear that I don't typically have, but other people do.
Yeah.
And they have good cause.
Yeah. Yeah. It's interesting that you point that out, because growing up, you in my surroundings, one of the things you recognize is you recognize areas you belong and areas you don't belong in terms of the family dynamic where I was at. And I don't mean that in terms of like, oh, no, don't go past that gate because that's private property. No, it's more of like when you would visit one of the ladies at the church, and they live in a very nice neighborhood. And as soon as you drive up, you know, with your family, you realize, yeah, I don't belong. Like, there's an instant feeling of like, yeah, if I step out, I know that there's going to be at least one pair of eyes that's going to be watching where I step, what I do with my hands, where I'm going to be walking up to the door. Why am I walking up to the door? Am I the gardener? Am I the gardener's son? You know, am I here to do, you know, the landscaping? Am I, you know, am I here to cut the grass? Am I here just because I'm Hispanic? So that's usually the first thing that most people immediately, you know, think when they see me in that aspect. And it's interesting because that's a pretty ingrained reflex as a child. That was a pretty ingrained reflex that I was brought up with, not because, you know, I needed to know my place. That was never taught to me by my family. That was never the lesson to learn, that, oh, you need to know your place, you can't be. But it was that for your own safety, for your own well-being, for the sake of making sure that you are in the least amount of trouble that you can be in, not because I'm looking for it, but because it's out there looking for me.
Sure.
And so growing up like that, you tend to, and I'm pretty sure Spencer can, you know, speak towards this. You tend to allow yourself to be mindful. It's almost like an instinct within you. Like, no, I shouldn't be in this area alone, or I shouldn't be around this area alone, or I shouldn't be walking down this neighborhood at this time, we're doing these things because there are individuals who don't think highly of the color of my skin, or because I'm a male, you know, in those aspects as well, because I'm walking either because I'm actually a kind of a large guy. And in high school, I was actually a little bit more muscular. So walking around being a muscular Hispanic individual, first thing people thought when they would look at me was, oh, he's a gangbanger. You know, and that was the, you know, I don't know how many times you've had this, Spence, but I've had where I've walked across the street and you just hear that click, click, you know, of people's car doors getting locked because they see me. And I'm like, you don't even know me. But to have that experience and to know that, to come to the realization that that is the norm, you know, that is what I have come to expect out of my life, you know? And I think that's one of the things that this film touches on is the fact that, oh yeah, you know, no. Like when the scene, when the cop is there and they're trying to figure out the whole situation after they accidentally hit a deer, mm-hmm. and the cop is there and the cop is talking to her and he's like, well, next time just call animal control. And she's like, oh, I'm so sorry. I didn't know. And he's like, hey, can I get your ID, your driver's license as well? And his instinct was, oh yeah, here, sure. It was just reflex because you don't want to cause issues there because that will escalate in our world, in my world, in that aspect, it'll escalate. And you tend to be on the lower end of that conversation real quick. And she obviously steps forward and is like, no, you don't need to see his ID. He wasn't driving. He was, and she,
I freaked out when she said that in the theater. I was like, what are you doing?
You're going to get him in trouble. Cut it out. But it was those instances where it's like, it's ingrained to just be like, you know, I guess I'm just being super honest today. One of the first conversations that my dad had with me when I got my license was, if you ever get pulled over, do exactly what they say. Even no matter what all your friends do, whatever, anything else, you do exactly as they say because you don't want to be that one person. And I didn't understand what that one person meant until I got older and I started seeing a lot more of the world
right
as it is.
Well, that's the real kicker, is that it's not all of that preparation, all of the tension that suffuses every sequence of this film is based on something. Like, it's not unfounded. It's not made up. It's not contrived for the tension of the movie. It's an actual tension in our society.
Yeah.
It's part of the structure of how our society functions, and it's a dysfunctional part.
Yeah.
But it's really there. Like, that's an actual, those experiences happen on a daily basis.
Even speaking to,
I mean, hopefully not like the experiences, you know, of this of the actual sequence of this movie, because there is a hopefully fantastical element of the film that is not normal for anybody, I hope.
All I'm saying is I don't want to see what Jordan Peele had to do to research that part of the film. That's all I'm saying. Like, well, let's see. Oh, I guess this test subject didn't make it. Let's bring in the next one. I know I'll get it right sooner or later. But even it's the little things in this film that really speak the loudest when I saw it. And I think in terms of, like you were saying, a lot of the situations, a lot of the experiences that are going on in the film, you're right, they're not created for comedic relief. They're not on the spot just pulled out of thin air. They're taken from true experiences, from life experiences, from things that are the norm. Like I was watching the film again as we saw it today, and I was realizing, I'm like, man, his paranoia is although obviously you as the viewer, the third perspective, third point of view, are looking in and you're like realizing, yeah, this is all crazy. But the paranoia is a natural thing for like a lot of us, because you're making sure that, oh, do I have this? Do I have my driver's license on me? Do I have this if I need it? You know, we've had my wife on the show, and my wife recently became an American citizen. She had her residency for a while, and now she was a citizen. But growing up, one of the things that she would have to worry about was making sure she had her passport on her and her green card everywhere. That was something that her mom had told her. You know, always make sure you have this on you just in case. And it's like that paranoia was like, oh yeah, it makes sense, because even though he's freaking out because his phone keeps getting unplugged or people keep acting weird around him, I felt like, yeah, that seems very familiar. What about you, Spence? What did you think?
Oh no, it was super familiar and super justifiable for the most part, because like when people just like look at you oddly and you're a person of color, you kind of have to start wondering, it's like, what do they think I'm going to do right now?
Yeah.
Like, there's times where he's just walking around, people like there's a scene in the movie where he's at a party and people are just acting all sorts of ridiculous around him.
True. Like,
especially this one part where this woman just walks up to him and starts feeling his bicep. I've had that happen to me, and it's terrifying. It's like, get off! What are you doing? Get away from me!
Wow.
It's true.
It's terrible.
It's funny, but it's true, because like, I not in the same instance as Spence. Yeah. I've never had anybody fill me up, but but like you have the assumptions, the social faux pas, if you will, in terms of, you know, when I enter a conversation or anybody like in my family or people I know of, you know, Hispanic descent, where the first thing that immediately happens is somebody tries to speak Spanish to me. And that's so wonderful when I get that opportunity to tell them, I'm sorry, bro, I don't speak Spanish. Unless you're talking about the Taco Bell menu.
Español.
Exactly. But you have that, and then you have the people who are like, you know, oh, yeah, you know, si se puede. Like, I wasn't around for that, but I appreciate the sentiment. You know, I stand with Cesar Chavez, too. And then you get a lot of like, oh, were you a fan of Selena? And did you, you know, do you
the
watch
answer
novellas?
To that is yes.
Heck yeah.
You were a huge
bitty bitty bum bum all day long. But it's like, do these presumptuous questions to create a sense of comfort or a sense of ease or a sense of connection, tends to make the moments all that more uncomfortable. And you're right. Like, the second time I realized what they were doing as they were asking questions. But the first time I was like, this is awkward even for me, because it's like, I know not to do those things.
Yeah, it's
sometimes
super awkward, because it's I mean, in a way, it's like ultimately, you know, they tell you in short order what that is all about. You learn quickly what all of that party sequence is for. In terms of the purposes of those awkward characters. But even when you don't know the purpose and you don't know like exactly where it's going, you still get that feeling of almost like a circus oddity, like the bearded lady
conjoined twins.
Yeah,
or
like you're this novelty item that people feel like, because you're different from them, that they have the agency to come up and be totally weird to you.
Yeah.
And you're supposed to be okay with it, and you don't get an explanation.
Yeah.
It's you're like just there to be the novelty.
Yeah.
You know, in this case, I mean, essentially he's not the only black person, but he's one of the only black people. And the more you learn later on, he really is at that moment the only black person who's fully himself.
Yeah.
You know, in that sequence.
Spencer, here's a quick question. How many times in awkward social settings have people asked, can I touch your hair?
I've had that happen a few times.
That seems to be like any time like I'm in an awkward situation where I know somebody is getting asked very poignant questions because they're trying to make that connection, that usually becomes the fallback, like, oh my gosh, I just, I know this is like super offensive. I get it. I just, but could I just touch your hair?
But
it feels like a sheep.
Can
I?
Yeah. I feel like you don't. Plus there was this one person who like took a different approach and just asked a question. They're like, so is your hair like Velcro? Like
Velcro?
Yeah.
Yeah, sweetheart. I actually, God gave me this small strip and it grew as I became older. I have to go into the doctor every now and get stitches taken fixed up. That's an interesting.
Oh, it was an interesting one.
Yes, toss a cotton ball at it and it'll stick. Wow, wow.
But this film continues to create a pending doom, if you will, mm-hmm. as the film from the beginning to end. There's no sense of really letting up. Not that it ramps up constantly and it's like, oh my gosh, it's like this crazy chaos of stuff. But it's like from the beginning of the film all the way through, like when they hit the deer to when they get there to when, you know, the awkward conversations, like that whole conversation that the dad has when they first get there about deers and how much he hates deers and how they're bringing down the economy and they're doing this. And I'm like, am I the only one that's like,
yeah, that's not about deer.
Yeah, that wasn't about deer
at
all.
That's not about deer.
And I'm like, that's kind of on the nose. But just as it continued, it seemed like the pacing of the film, just the footsteps of the pacing got heavier. They weren't quicker, but they were just heavier each time the film continued to move and move and move. And one of the things that I had said on our last episode that I really loved about this film was that it allows you to really see through the main protagonist's point of view throughout this entire film. Like, you are literally Chris the majority of the time, looking at life and looking at what's going on, viewing things through his camera. The film, ultimately I'm saying, is the film plays a real big emphasis on eyes, seeing the vision, the view, if you will. I don't know, what do you think, Chad?
Well, and obviously, you know, on first viewing of the film, you know that his perspective is limited. He doesn't know what's going on yet, but he knows that something's going on.
Yeah.
And you, as the audience, along with him, you're like, this isn't at all normal. There's something going on, and I don't get to know any more than he does most of the time. So, I mean, there are a few scenes with a friend of his, a TSA agent who's watching their dog back in Brooklyn.
Right.
But aside from that character, all the other scenes are from Chris's point of view. Or you're with Chris, I should say. You're not literally looking through his eyes.
No.
But yeah, I mean, from everything from meeting what appears to be the gardener and like the cook slash maid of the household, both of whom are black, who turn out to not be who they're presented as over time. And meeting the Rose's parents. The father is a neurosurgeon and the mother is a psychiatrist.
Yeah.
And there's a whole sequence of not hibernation, hypnotism. Like, wrong age word. A hypnotism sequence that is really compelling.
It is.
Like, really, really interesting in a sort of terrifying way.
Yeah.
But it's a really compelling sequence that has lasting effects for the rest of the film. And all of these experiences for him, he's like, this is not normal. Like, he asked the question of his girlfriend Rose in the beginning in their apartment, like, have you told them that I'm black? And of course, and it reminded me a lot of Guess Who?
Guess Who?
Where Ashton Kutcher is asking Zoe Saldana, like, have you told them? And then the cab driver,
yeah,
that ultimately ultimately Bernie Mac's character thinks that he's the boyfriend.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, she's like, it's not gonna matter, and the cab driver's like, oh, it's gonna matter. It's gonna matter. You know, but like, what he's saying is, have you told them, because it's going to matter.
Yeah.
And she insists that it's not. Obviously, you learn more things much, much later in the film about why in this scenario that question is actually pretty irrelevant.
Yeah.
There's a whole other scheme at play, you know. But if it were a normal, like a Guess Who situation, because of the way that society, you know, has functioned or dysfunctioned for so long, it's going to matter.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And I think even deeper into that is, not only does it matter, but I think the primary concern for Chris at the time was it mattered to him.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Because he is the one who will have to face this. And I'm pretty sure it's not the first time he's ever come across this. And this is something of deep importance that he's learned. Just like those ingrained things that we talked about, it's an important thing because it matters to me, you know?
Well, plus one of the reasons why it really mattered was because she was driving up there. They were taking her car. So he didn't have a way back unless he called a taxi.
Leave it to Spence to bring him back to the solid truth.
That is the level right there. That is the level. Well, and I was wondering the whole time, and this is a totally different topic, but I'm like, hold on, wait a minute. The apartment that they're living in is a studio apartment, and granted, it's New York, so things are expensive, but they're living in a studio apartment, but they're driving a really nice Lincoln SUV. Like, and they're young. I mean, they're like mid to late 20s, young. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So it's like, wait, what do they do? Like, what exactly do they... Does she come from money, or like what you learn, obviously, that she does when you get to the house? But, you know, it's like, wait a minute. Hold on. Did they rent that car? Is that, I don't know. I was wanting to pick up on details. So I was observing things that turned out to not be crucial to the story, but I'm like, wait a minute. That doesn't match. They would have something more than a studio apartment, although it did have exposed brick. So, you know,
it's true.
Fancy.
That's very
trendy.
True. Well, and I think one of the things that it doesn't speak about, in just going to what you were saying, one of the things it doesn't speak towards is how successful Chris really is as a photographer. Because you see in that opening sequence, you do see a lot of his pieces that he has on the wall as a photographer. And you don't really know how popular or how famous or how, you know, accomplished of a photographer he is. Although you do hear about this individual who is a gallery owner who says he's heard of his work and he's heard of his, you know, the stuff that he's shot, and he's really impressed. He's a fan of it. And so that could be part of it. I mean, hey,
which
he
is
could
Milton from Office Space.
Yes.
the gallery owner who's actually blind.
Yes.
By the time you meet him, he's gone blind.
Yes.
He references a time where he wasn't blind when he, you know, was a curator or whatever before, but he's gone blind, and he's part of this whole party sequence thing with the silent bingo game and
silent bingo auction.
Yeah, it was the total meat market. Gross. just gross. All of it was gross.
It was. And can I just say that I know there's a lot of great standout performances in this film, but I think one of the most menacing things about this film was the brother.
Oh, for sure.
I have to say.
For sure. That guy was crazy.
He is, for me, he embodied every friend's brother that just goes way too far with certain jokes or does way too much when it comes to hanging out. Like, I've had friends who have had that older brother or that brother who's like, oh, guys, why don't we jump off from the roof and go do this? And, oh, yeah, you guys would totally get, you guys would totally smash. And it's like, no. Yeah? No? No. Should we? Can we? And you end up with a broken arm.
And you know, and it's a terrible idea.
Yeah.
Everything that comes out of his mouth is a terrible idea.
But it sounds so cool when it comes out of his mouth, and you're like,
get hurt. But not this brother in this film.
No.
This brother in this film, like, every single thing that he says or does or looks at is wrong.
Oh, yeah.
No.
Like, and you realize that right as soon as he's sitting at the dinner table, and he's just, I don't know if he was really drunk when he did the scene, but like he made me feel like he was drunk. Like, I was like, oh my gosh, they allowed him to get drunk on the set. But he looked scary, looked menacing. And I'm like, yeah, no. Like,
when he gets up to put Chris in a headlock, I mean, okay, Spencer, if you were there at that table, and this dude walks around the table, I mean, you're a buff dude, right? So you could definitely like throw him down on the ground and take him. But like, I don't, like, Chris allows him to put his hands on him. Like, he doesn't stop him until like his hands are already there. I'm like, what? Whoa.
Because like he was already suspicious of some stuff like at that point. So it made more sense for like him to be watching people. But I don't know why he wasn't watching. It was weird.
I don't know. All I know is that I was watching him get up. The first time I saw it, I was watching him get up. I'm like, oh, no.
Yeah, this is what you don't want.
this movie's going to end quite early. Like, this gentleman assaulted my son. And, you know, that's what I figured that was going to go to or something. Is like, you know. But, yeah, I got to hand it to this actor, Caleb Landry Jones. In terms of creating that dread in the film, part of the thing, like, obviously you have the overwhelming dread from the mother as well as the
yeah, Catherine Keener was definitely a force to be reckoned with in this movie, but in the silent way. Like, the looks that she gave people and the, like, quiet, like, basically commands that she issued.
Yeah.
I was like, I would... It doesn't matter if you have the same skin tone as me. If we like lived down the street, I would be out of your house. That was creepy from moment one.
I don't think at any point in the film she actually raises her voice at all.
No.
And yet she is still one of, like you said, one of the commanding figures, not only in that family, but in the film altogether. Mm-hmm. But you have obviously the overwhelming dread from her. You have the unique place of the father, who is interesting from the get-go. He's kind of
my
like...
My man.
Yeah, he's trying to do the whole, like, let me integrate with your culture, and the whole what is it? The little walkthrough of the house, mm-hmm. the tour of the house. And he's like, yeah, there's just something about, you know, getting ingrained with other people's culture. And I'm like, yeah, I bet. After the fact, yeah, I bet.
Right.
But you have all these individuals, and they're more of like a cerebral dread, if you will. It's more of on like a subtle level. But then you have the brother who's just this, like, one feather short of just busting loose.
And yeah, it's like they're all off, but he's way off.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. And so this film obviously culminates into what we later find out is they are actually...
Well, it takes the idea of cultural assimilation,
yes,
like, to the nth degree, because that's the threat. That's the ideological threat is you have been brought here not so that we can learn about your life experience and maybe change how we behave. You have been brought here to be assimilated into our way of life. And that's what he witnesses through the other black characters. That they are assimilated in a freaky way. Like, they do not behave normally.
No.
Any of them.
Not at all.
They don't speak the way that you would expect them to speak. They don't dress the way you'd expect them to dress. The way that they put ideas together is, like, remarkably off. Like, blatantly off. And so you know that this whole, like, what kind of an assimilation process... Are you ultimately, Chris, are you going to have to confront? And it's, but then what it does is it takes it to the nth degree by making it like a forced medical procedure, like assimilate, like you are replaced.
Yeah.
Mostly replaced. So really, I thought that was quite brilliant that it takes that assimilation factor and amps it up to like an 11. Of like, oh, this is like way beyond serious, but you have to go to that higher like intensity level.
Oh yeah,
to see how crazy the prospect is to begin with.
And it's interesting that in this particular part of their entire process, the individual who is going to be getting that assimilation, if you will, the individual who will become the new Chris, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
Is blind, and I find it fascinating that the first thing he says to Chris after Chris has realized that this is all happening, this is all, you know, he's strapped to a chair and he's looking at this live feed video, the first thing he tells him is, it's not about you being black, it's because I want your eyes,
right?
And it's like, but he's still black,
but he was a target in the first place,
exactly,
because he's black.
And it's like, so
they specifically target black people to do this with, as far as we're presented in the film.
Yeah.
And it that makes sense to the story it's telling. But.
And in my mind, I'm like, if they're, cause I'm assuming they're throwing up a lot of money, like, to make this happen. Like, when they're doing the auction, they're just doing like four, like he's just holding up single numeral numbers on his hand, like 4, 5, 10. And so I'm assuming that's in the millions. I would only assume. Because there's a lot of just stuff that would happen that would take a lot of money. But you would think, okay, if someone's going to put up that much money, why not go about just getting an eye transplant or something else? But it's to the effect of he not only wants the eye. I felt like there's a little bit of disingenuous. being disingenuous with Chris in terms of it's just the eyes that he wants, because then if that's the case, there's a simpler, not simpler, but a little bit more of a logical solution to that.
Well, I was assuming he was saying, like, I want your eye for, like, photography,
mm-hmm.
is what he was trying to get at, which I don't think works that way, because if you put your brain in someone else, like, you still have your own wiring. You're not going to just
right.
be an awesome photographer.
Yeah. And that goes to, like, I think that's why he was... That's where the disingenuousness comes from for me. It's like, but it's not just the eyes you want. It's not just the vision. It's not the way he views things. You want more. And I think that kind of speaks to a lot of like people who try to assimilate into your culture, Spencer, or even my culture, you know, however it may be. how, oh, no, I'm not trying to be black, or I'm not trying to be Mexican, I'm not trying to be Puerto Rican, I'm not trying to do this, I'm just doing these things because I like them, or because I think it fits with me, or I think, and it's not, because it's more of a robbery of you, of your culture, of what are considered, you know, your traditions, my traditions. We've talked about this with, like, other things, like with when we talked about Coco, how we were hoping that Coco wasn't going to be this, like, and pardon my language, but like this bastardization of the Hispanic culture, because then there's no point in watching it, really. And well, I will be one of the first people out at the theaters to protest this.
I think the other thing with regard to this movie specifically, it would be, there would still be absolutely a component, a discomfort if all of these decisions were Chris's decisions. Like, yeah. If Chris went to suburban upstate New York and for whatever reason decided that he wanted to assimilate into their culture, because of his love for Rose, because of, you know, whatever it might be, whatever. If it were his decision, everything would have a totally different tone. The reason why it's so sinister is because he doesn't get to make any of the choices.
Oh, no, not at all.
They're all making the choices for him, and in fact, have lured him there to begin with. You learn later, and it's, if you haven't seen the movie, then shame on me. The relationship with Rose is not even real. He was a target. She brought him, like, she entered the relationship in order to bring him to her family's home and do all of this. So even from the get-go, even his decision to go with her to visit her family wasn't really his decision to go with her. She was a predator and he was the prey before he even knew her.
What do you think, Spence?
Yeah. No, I agree with that. And then, like after, like, she thinks she's got Chris and, like, they're about to do the surgery, she's upstairs in her room, like, picking out her next target. Because, like, early in the movie, mm-hmm. Chris finds, this photo, this box of photos, and Rose has said that she's never dated anyone black before, but it's just photo after photo of her with, like, some black people. And you know she's a liar.
Right. And it's one at a time. It's each of her targets one at a time.
Mm-hmm. Because you ultimately
She is what you'd call in a much nicer terms, like in HR, she's a headhunter. Like, who what kind of person?
Literally. Headhunter.
True.
And like I said, this film, yes, it has its entertainment value, but I firmly believe that Jordan Peele, when he created this film and when he had, you know, the script created and he executed both of these, that I think in his mind he knew this was going to create a much larger conversation, as is the conversation that we're having right now, because it's not just if it was just a simple horror film, this wouldn't be a great horror film. Mm-hmm. Like, if it didn't have a lot of these commentary aspects where, like, oh, I can speak to this, I can speak to that, I relate here, I relate there, you know, or even from Chad's perspective of, well, I can recognize the other side of that, you know, in terms of from this point of view, from these points of view, and even recognize this aspect in your life or my life, Spence. If it didn't have any of those, this would be a horrible horror film.
Yeah.
Horror. I'm going to 2018 goal. Learn how to say horror,
learn how to
right.
pronounce it correctly.
Scary movie. There.
One thing that I'm interested, Spencer, from you, when we were picking our top movies from 2017 and giving feedback, one of the reasons that you had given for Get Out, you know, being top of your list was because of the impact it had on you in terms of opening your eyes about your own life. Mm-hmm. Were there any specific things that stood out to you that we haven't covered that were like aha moments? Like, wow, this movie gets me in ways that I didn't even know I needed to be gotten.
Well, no, most of it is like before the reveal of like the body switching thing, like the party scene and just like a lot of the off comment stuff there. And then just like the tiny microaggressions, like seriously, I really freaked out when Rose like talked back to that cop because like I was like, not a thing you do. You just don't do it.
It's a bad idea.
That's why she was such a hero to her boyfriend. He's like, you actually can do that? You can do that?
Yeah, that was horrifying. I was like sinking in my seat. That was the horror movie element, was her talking back to this police officer. But we've mostly talked about like the rest of the stuff I was feeling. But like, yeah, those are like a few things where I'm like, I'm shocked I'm seeing this on film because I'm 30 and I've never seen anything quite like it before. And it was amazing for me to just see someone who had a very similar like life experience, minus like the body switching stuff. I've never had that problem.
That we know of. I think we're going to have to check Spencer's hairline and see.
Right.
Yeah, that was one of the running gags that after I went to see it at the theater. When we went back to work, because we worked together, we were going to check other
the person that you went to the film with instead of me.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. I just wanted to clarify.
Yeah. That
was the other party.
We were going to check the hairlines of other individuals and see if they've been, quote, assimilated. We're just going to check for scars on people.
Oh, boy.
There was a point in this conversation, Chad, where you said that there were some hyped moments where after seeing it, it didn't kind of hit that mark. And I'm just wondering at what part of the film, or what parts, if there's plural, what parts of the film didn't actually hit all those high marks for you? I'm interested in actually hearing.
It's really more of an overall flavor. I think coming from the community that I come from, which I love, I visit at least once a year still for the holidays, my family, and not my family specifically, but the whole community I'm from. I mean, I remember in middle school, somebody pointed out in one of my classes, well, didn't this town used to be a hotbed for the KKK? And I had never heard that before, but the teacher said, actually, yeah, this whole area was at one point a hotbed for the KKK. And I was like, whoa, that's terrible. But then in high school, this is how non-diverse my community used to be. It is much more so now than it used to be. But there was a black family that moved into town, and I do not recall what the father and mother did. And they had, I think, two kids, one of whom was in my grade, and it was freshman year. And somebody, as a stupid joke, I don't even think it was the KKK. I think it was probably some stupid young person. But they put a cross on their lawn and burned it and lit it on fire on their lawn. And it was, it was just one of those like, wait, I haven't had to, none of us, few of us in that community had to confront something so ugly, like head on. There were homecoming, we would paint sections of the parking lot, and the night before homecoming, everything had to be finished. Well, somebody came in that night and repainted over quite a few of the squares in the parking lot, and there were racially charged messages and just other stupid things. I mean, it was a lot of stupidity. But the takeaway that I had from that was, I mean, essentially, wow, how ugly is this, and how much are we just all not used to it in that community? Having lived in several other places, including New York City and a few places in California, which are among the most diverse areas of the country, it's remarkable how much richness there is when people are allowed to express, like, their own background and where they come from, and not have to assimilate and everybody be one note, you know? Yeah. So with this film though, I think reflectively thinking about the whole picture, there are some elements that I think if you want to maximize the social commentary aspect, you need to be more blatant. There were some things in this film that were a little too subtle. The thing that helped was that there was an actual medical procedure that was gruesome and weird to cap everything off, you know, as the, you know, the climax of the film is like, oh, I do not want to see that. And it brings the concepts into this really physical, visceral reality. And I think that's where you get some more bang for your buck, because earlier, a lot of the uncomfortable sequences, I could easily see people that I grew up around not getting it. Like, you just don't know what the movie is trying to tell you.
Yeah.
And not because you're dumb, but because you've never had to confront it. It's not a daily part of your life to think through. Or a periodic, like a known factor. It's not something that your dad already had to warn you about, or, you know, something that you've already run into numerous times. You know, growing up and already had to navigate awkward moments like that. And I think that just showing how awkward it is isn't really the whole message.
Yeah.
And the only thing that really approaches the whole message is sort of the literal brain swap thing that is going to occur, you know, in the climax of the film. So for me, in terms of the things that I was a little dissatisfied with, it was a little more subtle on, it wasn't subtle. It was, it never really came out and said it. It was all, there was a lot of, you need to do a lot of inferring. If this doesn't match anything in your personal experience repertoire, then you have to be really open and receptive and willing to do some mental work to understand what they're showing you and what it all means, and how it applies to real people's lives in the day-to-day world.
There you go.
I don't think there was any one sequence that I was like, wow, that really fell flat.
Yeah.
The film was quieter overall than I expected it to be. I will say that there was, I expected, cause it is a psychological thriller, and the psychological parts of it, the hypnotism and everything, were way interesting in a like scary kind of way. But it's again, Catherine Keener never really raises her voice at all. Yeah. It's very calm, and that can be unsettling in its own way, but I was expecting a little more intensity. I was expecting the buildup to not all happen in the last 30 minutes in terms of the intensity of the energy of the characters.
Yeah.
It was all pretty low to middle key up until that point.
Well, there you go.
There was one part of it that, like, upon first viewing, I didn't understand what was happening. And it was the part where... Chris, the main character, goes outside to have a smoke, and he's just out there, and then all of a sudden, like, the gardener is just running straight at him for like a few seconds and then zooms right past him, and then they move on. And I was like, wait, what's going on there? Like, and that bothered me after the movie. I had to look that one up to figure out it was part of like the throwaway line the father first says, like, oh, yeah, my dad never got past the being beaten by the black guy in the Olympics.
By Jesse Owens.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So that was a callback to that. I was like,
so that one wasn't as obvious to you.
Yeah.
Although,
well, and it's never really, like, that's a good example, because you do have to put two and two together after finishing the movie.
Yeah.
Like, you at a certain point, you know who the gardener really is, and you know the story you've been told, but in order to make sense of that scene where he's running straight at you and then dodges at the last moment, that's an extra mental step.
Yeah.
But I think that particular scene in itself, and there are several other ones where that's kind of the jewel of the second viewing, that after you've first initially seen the film, and you're processing and you're digesting everything that you've seen after the first viewing, the second time you see it, you become more aware, or awake, if you will, woke, in terms of a lot of what's going on behind the scenes while Chris is, you know, being, you know, welcomed into the home, and the tour through the house, and the off comment that you were talking about of, you know, yeah, he came in second to Jesse Owens and he almost got over it. And it's like, Ah, running. I get it. And so I think that might be, honestly, I think that was intentional. I think those types of things where after you see it, the idea is, wait, so did you catch that? No, wait, I didn't. Well, do you remember this part? Well, okay, let's watch it again. And then you watch it again, and then you get more out of the second viewing. Because I can honestly say I got more out of the second time of seeing this film than I did after the first time. The first time, I'm still processing just very surface-level information aside from whatever articles or whatever study that has been done after the fact. Initially, after I saw the film, there was a lot of surface-level stuff that I was trying to digest. Now that I've seen it the first time, upon second viewing, there's so much more to dig through and so much more to really dive into.
Yeah, like during this viewing, I was like, this movie is so deep. Like there's that first surface level, then this other level of like people just mentioning things casually. It's like, oh, this is our kitchen. Like we always keep a piece of my mom in here. It's like they literally keep a piece of her in here.
You don't even know.
So, obviously, the film passes for Spencer, and it passes for me because we've talked about that. But in terms of Chad, does the film pass or fail, and how many monocles? And we'll give our monocle.
I would definitely say it passes, and not only because it's not really just a scary movie, which is why I initially was passing on going to see it. The genre thing gets me. I'm like, I'll wait until it comes out on DVD. But it's not at its heart. It's not a scary movie.
No, not at all.
There's a lot of sinister content at the heart of what it's telling you, and that's real world sinister content.
Exactly.
Which is all the more compelling. So it would definitely passes for me for being, you know, more than one thing at this all at one time. I would give it 4 monocles.
Four out of five.
Yeah.
Awesome. Spence, if you could give it a rating, I know it's one of your best films of 2017, but if you could ultimately kind of sum up your rating for the film, is it a 5 out of 5? He's squinting his eyes. He's thinking here.
I'm real stingy with my 5 out of 5.
Oh, this is going to be a great year of reviewing films.
To mean something, you know?
Love that.
So, this is going to be a 4 out of 5 for me, but a really strong 4 because this movie is just well done for, like, you know, his first, like, directing. And it's just so much going on, like, during multiple viewings that it's just a real pleasure to watch. Plus it's like a beautiful movie. Like there's just certain shots like where Chris is in like the hypnotism and then he gets thrown into the sunken place, just him falling into like this black abyss and you can only see out through his eyes. Like it's a television window. It's like,
and where he's not heard, but she is.
Yeah.
That's the unique thing to remember out of that scene is that he is not audible at all, but you can still hear Catherine Keener's character clear as a bell.
Yeah, that was just so well done. So, yeah, 4 out of 5.
Well, the film is it's a great film. It's honestly one of those commentary pieces that will be talked about, I could probably say, for a good amount of time, at least for the next year or so, because with the Oscar season, with award season well underway, this film is going to be at the forefront of many conversations of the possibility of either Best Picture or Best Actor. So here's to hoping that it gets the accolades it deserves. But to kind of one up you guys, I'm just going to give it a 4.1.
Get out of here. Get out.
4.1. What's that mess? Never heard of 4.1.
The film is great, and like I said, it's going to be one of those conversation starters that will continue on as just the world really evolves and understands it more and more. And who knows, maybe the next, you know, Get Out film will debut this year as well, and it'll allow us to kind of get into that next level of conversation starting. So who knows? But That about wraps up another awesome episode of The Filmlosophers. Remember, you can catch us on socials at facebook.com/filmlosophers or on Twitter at twitter.com/filmlosophy101 or our website at filmlosophers.com. Remember, filmlosophers, plural, with an S. This was a great start to an awesome year, and we are so excited to have Spence on and a part of this team. And just, you guys get ready to hear some awesome stuff out of Spencer, because Spencer's going to bring the heat.
Oh, I'm going to bring something.
That's
he's going to bring the sass is what he's going to bring.
That's what I'm thinking. So, from all of us here at the Filmlosophers, I'm Eddie.
I'm Chad.
I'm Spencer.
Class dismissed.